funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What's the difference between teaching a child to read and teaching a child to love books? As plenty of frustrated parents and teachers can attest, even some highly competent young readers approach the written word with about as much enthusiasm as laundry folding. So how can we encourage them not just to complete required assignments, but to cultivate a love of reading for its own sake? Donalyn Miller has some thoughts about that. She expects her sixth grade students at Trinity Meadows Intermediate School in Keller to read 40 complete books every school year, a requirement they often exceed. And she has some unorthodox approaches to whetting kids' appetites for literature. She shares those ideas in a new book called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. Donalyn, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. It's great to be here.
What have you learned about why some kids don't think they like to read?
I think part of it is they're not given enough opportunity to choose their own books. Reading is for them a school task that is in the hands of teachers. Teachers choose what we read, when we read, and how we'll respond to that reading. And so they're disconnected from reading as something that is that belongs to them.
Yeah, if there's one thing that comes through in the book over and over again, it's that you have to let kids read what they want to read.
I agree. As an adult reader, I practice that. I choose what books I'd like to read. I choose what books I abandon. I think most adult readers do. And I think what we need to do with children is show them that reading has a life beyond school. And let's take a look at the habits of adult readers and try to bring into the classroom ways to teach children to develop those habits themselves.
One of the things you do is devote a significant amount of classroom time to letting your students sit there and read. Now, a lot of people would say that should be outside the classroom and you should be up there instructing instead. Can you talk about your thoughts about that?
Well, first I want to say we're not laying in beanbag chairs, singing kumbaya, reading all day. Because sometimes people think, oh, are you checking your email while the kids are reading? No, I'm still there instructing. What I'm doing while the students are reading is meeting with them one-on-one, talking to them about the books that they're reading, making suggestions, digging through bins with them. I'm there as a more experienced reader in that role, as a mentor for them. But I also think that you make time for what you value. And if I value reading, then I must make time for it in my classroom. And I can never control how much reading my students do outside of the classroom. And I think we can attest that they're maybe not reading much outside of the classroom. So I have to make time for it in class.
So you have them read 40 books a year. Did mm-hmm. you do that on the first day you walked in to teach your first sixth grade class?
Oh, goodness, no. I really didn't know what I was doing, I promise. And I think every new teacher can say what they wish they could hit the rewind button and go back and first apologize to that first class they had and then start over. But I taught the way that I think most of us have experienced English classes, language arts classes in school. I taught with a whole class novel. Everyone read the same book. We stopped at significant points in the book and did response activities. We did a project. We did vocabulary. And I taught that way because that was what I thought reading instruction looked like in a classroom. It didn't take me long, though, to figure out that that type of instruction is actually part of what disenfranchises children from reading. I could see it. They would do the activities that I asked them. They were compliant because that is what you do when you're at school. But I could tell their hearts weren't into it. And when my more avid readers started asking me, hey, I'm done with my crossword puzzle for chapter 5. Can I read my book now? I realized I needed to start thinking about reading instruction differently.
I think most of us who went to school remember reading the whole, we'd all read The Grapes of Wrath and it would take a month or something. And then we'd, like you said, talk about it and talk about the major themes. What happens there with, why do you lose the kids when you try to do it this way?
Well, first, back to what I said about the way that adult readers read. No one does that.
Even in a book club. Yeah,
even in a
book
club.
Finish the book first and then, yeah.
And then we meet. I mean, when I'm talking to my friends at work, I always joke and say, I'm not whipping a diorama out of my pocket to share with them about the last great novel I read. It's more organic than that. And so I think that's part of it. I think they don't really get a chance to fall into a book and enjoy the story, the flow of it. The purpose for reading for them is not about enjoying the book or even comprehending it. It's about completing activities.
I have to tell you, as a parent, and I now have four kids, the diorama or make a puppet about the book or whatever, they make me crazy. Mm-hmm. But I always assume that they're for the kids who really don't like reading, and this makes something fun.
Well, I think the message we might be sending to those kids is that reading has no innate value, and so we must sugarcoat it with this icing of puppets and activities in order to make it interesting. So we may actually be sending a negative message about reading by dumping all those activities on top of it.
One thing that I love that you include in the book is this reader's bill of rights, which includes things like the right to skip pages, the right not to finish a book, the right to read for escapism and not defend one's choices, and even the right not to read. Mm-hmm. How does that encourage reluctant readers?
Well, first, I'd like to say those aren't my rights. Mm-hmm. They're Daniel Pennack, the French author, actually came up with those. But I think there are times, even as a voracious reader, that I'm just not in the mood. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to watch with children, especially in the classroom, that that's not the right they exercise the most. But if a student or a child is unwilling to read, then maybe we want to look at what we're asking them to read. They're not motivated. Why are they not motivated? Why are they choosing not to read today? And my students have that option. If they don't feel like reading their book during our workshop time, then they can write their response letters. We can have a conference. Reading is still the topic, but perhaps they're not reading that at that moment.
So it's not a matter of saying, okay, go ahead and text your friends or work on homework for social studies. They're working on something related to reading.
I tell my that my students never get to work on homework in my class, and we don't allow cell phones. But reading is always the topic. They're working with their friends. We use a social networking site to blog about our books, but it's always reading.
Now, are you teaching at a private school?
No.
It's a public school.
Public school.
So is this all hard to do within the boundaries of what you are required to do as a teacher?
Amazingly, no. And that's one of the things that I try to emphasize in the book, is that you really can have it all. I am not a free agent. I am an employee of a school district. And so I have state requirements that I need to follow. And I do all of those things and still provide my students all the choice and free reading that I do.
And your kids take all the same standardized tests as any others?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How often do they come in? I gather they've probably heard of you before they get you for sixth grade. But how often does a kid come in and say, there's no way I can do 40 books just this year?
That happens quite a bit. I did have one poor student cry and ask to be moved out of my class 1 year. And he said, I just can't do it. And I told him, I said, yes, you can. I've had many students who have accomplished this, and you can do it. And I think he read 35 books that year.
Which is really good.
He was amazingly proud of himself.
Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of kids will say, well, they don't have time to get all this reading done. And you're a big believer in what you call stealing time for reading. Mm-hmm. I guess you encourage them to have a book with them all the time.
Well, again, life readers, these are the habits I want my students to internalize while they're with me. And life readers carry books with them. My husband rides the train every day, the DART train, and he always has a book with him. And he says that on the train, people ask him for book recommendations because they notice that he always has a book. I have a book in my purse. We take books to the doctor's office, to the dentist's office, waiting in line. If we know we're going to be waiting, readers take books with them. And students spend a lot of time waiting at school. My students take their books when we go on field trips. And they take books when we line up for picture day and we're waiting to have our pictures taken.
That's one of my favorite stories in the book because it takes hours and hours to get everybody through the line.
When I first started teaching, it amazed me how much time picture day took out of a class day. because you have to line. I mean, it's really amazing that they can get 1,000 children's photographs taken in about 3 hours. But it's a lot of standing around. Children are wiggly. They're visiting. They see it as a break from class. And as a teacher, it was a management problem, because you're trying to herd all of them and keep track of them. And so we just started bringing our books to Picture Day because I saw some of my students were already doing that. And I thought, why not? Why can't all 25 of them bring their books? So I bring a basket. They all bring their books. We all sit and wait for picture time. When they stand up to go get their picture taken, I hold their book for them.
By sixth grade, I guess they're reading novels exclusively. They're beyond any kind of picture book or comic book.
Well, picture book, I don't think picture book necessarily means what we think it does, because I know when I was a mother of young children, picture book to me was Dr. Seuss or Chicka Chicka Boom Boom or one of those books that we read over and over again to our toddlers. But there's a lot of high-quality nonfiction being written in picture book format for older children. And so when I require my students to read informational books, there are certain picture books that I would allow them to read. We're not talking about picture books with one sentence on a page, though.
Donna Lynn Miller is my guest. She teaches sixth grade and social language and social studies at Trinity Meadows Intermediate School in Keller. Her new book is called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. We'll return to our conversation in just a moment, and you can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Right now, though, we want to talk to you about our spring membership campaign, and we want to ask you to call our other phone number, 1-800-456-5372. Jeff Whittington is here now. He is, did I cut myself off? I was trying not to scrape the mic. 1-800-456-5372. Of all things that you want to be able to hear during this conversation, Jeff Whittington is here, senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Yes, we're so thrilled to have Donalyn here in the studio today to talk about this. I know it's a very important topic that to many people in our audience, to many of you who have kids, many of you who believe that education is important. Education is always a big topic on the show. So when we do these membership campaigns, we try to think of things that, you know, keep you interested. And hopefully we don't cross over that line into the area of a guest being so interesting and the topic being so interesting, which today I think is what we're at risk of, that you don't call the pledge number.
It's easy to call. It takes just a couple of minutes, and you can do it right now while Jeff and I are yammering on, and then you won't miss any of Donalyn when we come back with her in just a couple of minutes. It's 1-800-456-5372. KERA is made up of a community of lifelong learners. We know that this topic is an easy sell to those of you who are in our audience. A lot of you describe listening to the station as akin to maybe reading a magazine or something of substance when you are not able to have a book in front of you when you're in the car. And we know some of you may try to read in the car, but we would discourage that. You can support the station right now, and the fact that we bring this to you in a form and with the amount of time to discuss a topic that no one else in the market does. Give us a call right now at 800-456-5372, or you can also go online to kera.org.
It's very easy for you to make your gift of support at kera.org. We've heard from several of you already this hour. Maybe Bonnie Glasgow. Thanks so much, Bonnie, in Dallas. Maybe Bonnie went online. Maybe Bonnie called. Beth Rainey in Dallas. John Bales in Dallas. They've done their part. We also heard from Kathy Farr in Fort Worth.
It's always wonderful to hear from Think listeners because we know that you are a loyal crew. But whether this is your favorite show on KERA or it's Morning Edition or anything you ever wanted to know or something on the weekends, whenever you call, your support will go to your favorite programs. Again, the number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Any contribution you want to make is fine. If you're in a position to do, you know, $1,500, that's terrific. If $10 or $20 a month works for you, we would be delighted to take that as well. You can do this on a credit or debit card. You can write a personal check if you like, or you can set up a sustaining membership, which is like a monthly draw.
It's a way to make your membership gift spread out all over the year and, you know, provide a monthly foundation of support for the station. And many, many of you have chosen to support KERA that way. So however you do it, however you want to pay, please decide to get involved right now at 800-456-5372 or via the web kera.org.
It really does make a big difference in our ability to serve you every single day. Again, 800-456-5372.
Support for KERA comes from you, our members, and from Kimberly-Clark, home of such well-known brands as Kleenex, Huggies, Kotex, and the recently announced nationwide availability of Scott Naturals to help consumers take a green step at home.
Park Place dealerships. You can choose from more than 600 pre-owned and certified pre-owned luxury vehicles at their 10 locations throughout Dallas-Fort Worth. Park Place dealerships, experts in excellence. Online at parkplacetexas.com.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Donalyn Miller. Her new book is called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. She also has a blog called The Book Whisperer. We will put a link to that on the Think page of KERA.org. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send an email to think@KERA.org. How important is it, Donalyn, to get kids to work their way through the canon of literature?
Well, I teach 11-year-olds, so they haven't quite gotten to the canon
stage. Just at the outer edge, I guess.
But I think we have to ask ourselves, are we teaching books or are we teaching readers? Because every student that goes through our classes isn't destined to become an English literature major, and we can't teach them as if they were. And so I think it's important to read classics. I think everyone in America should read To Kill a Mockingbird. I love that book. But I also think that we have to watch how we're teaching those classics. And I think beating them into the ground, where it takes 2 months to get through one of those books, and we're using it to teach 14 different literary techniques or elements, I think we have to watch that kind of instruction. So it's not the books themselves I think we need to be watchful for. It's the way that we approach them in the classroom.
So with the way you do things, if you're having students read different things at the same time, what are group discussions like?
Well, we have book commercials, and those are spontaneous testimonials where I just ask people who has a book to recommend. And the students begin to recommend books to each other. And so they will jump in with their own opinions of the book. We have some very organic discussions that way. But also I do a lot of thematic teaching where we might look at a specific theme and then choose books that explore that theme. So our discussions would center around the theme or the concept and how we approached it through the different books that we were reading.
Well, what I love about that is that it really requires them to think critically and justify the choice they've made. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. When we were studying World War II, I also teach social studies, as you mentioned, the students were able to choose their own books that with the only requirement being that they be about World War II, and they could choose a memoir, nonfiction text, they could choose a fiction novel to read. And we just had a few guiding questions that everyone needed to be able to answer by the time they finished their book. But the conversations that we had in the classroom looked at the perspectives of such a wide range of participants during the war, and it was much richer and deeper than it would have been if we had all just read the same book.
That also points to the idea that just because you're studying science or history or anything else, it's not separate from what you're doing in reading.
No. And I talked to students. One day I showed them that I could do math accidentally, I think, and they were amazed because I'm an English teacher. And I said, you know, we use all those parts of our brains, and we don't compartmentalize our brains into this is my time to think about reading and this is my time to think about science. And it's everything. Everything that you know is brought to the table.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number if you want to speak to Donalyn Miller, whose new book is The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. By the way, in a little while, when we go back to fundraising, we will tell you how to get a copy of Donalyn's book and support KERA. That's coming up. Let's go to Lupe in Dallas. Hi, Lupe.
Hi. I'm so excited to hear Ms. Miller speaking about teaching young children or awakening in them the desire to read. I had a comment and then a question for her. The comment was is that I used to read, I'm dating myself, but I used to read the old Run, Spot, Run, you know, when we first started to read in school. But I used to like to read comic books Little Lulu, and then I graduated to Spider-Man and so on. Well, eventually I became a lawyer, but that's neither here nor there. But then I discovered the Bronte sisters, and it was just so exciting. But what really caught me, a sixth grade teacher, we used to go to the library every week, and she would read books to us. And I remember she read Old Yeller to us with all of the emotion, the suspense. It was just wonderful, and that really hooked me. And my question to her is, does she start, with a book to engage her students that really hooks you into reading? I mean, because I remember that library teacher, she just painted a beautiful picture.
Thanks so much for your call.
All right.
Lupe, first let me say, if there are ever two words that will make my eyes well up with tears, they are the words Old Yeller. And I think many readers feel that way. I do read a lot of books with my students with the goal of hooking them on authors or even genres that they might not be familiar with, because I think if I can entice them with a short story or with a novel by a prolific author, and then the next question is invariably, do you have any more books by Gary Paulson or Wendy Mass or another author that they might enjoy. One book that I always read at the beginning of the school year is an anthology called Tripping Over the Lunch Lady, which is edited, I think, by Nancy Mercado. And it's a collection of short stories that are all about school and middle school in particular. My sixth graders are very interested in what that experience is like. And not only can they identify with the stories, but each one of the short stories is written by an author who writes full-length fiction novels for students. And so when they find a short story they've enjoyed, I'm able to put in their hands more books by that author.
Let's talk about reading aloud by students in the classroom. This is something that it can be great. It's good for fluency, but it can be a struggle for kids who may be a little bit behind their classmates in terms of being able to read aloud. And you've got kind of an interesting way to get around that.
I think if you talk to people who are traumatized by the reading experiences in school, one of them is probably reading out loud in front of the class. I think that unrehearsed reading is challenging for many children. I think oral fluency is important, but I don't think it needs to be a performance. I think what we can do to make that easier for children is to allow them the opportunity to read the text they'll be asked to read aloud as a rehearsal, either with a partner or silently to themselves. And then when it becomes their turn to read, they have already practiced that material and had the opportunity to discuss with me or with someone else words they may not know how to pronounce. They become more at ease. I think practicing it out loud a few times helps them as well.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next up, we have Felicia in Fort Worth. Hi, Felicia.
Hi. Ms. Miller, it's very nice to speak to you. My daughter is in the Keller ISD district. She's at Parkwood Hill Middle School. And my question was, how do you encourage a student that's dyslexic? Because both of my children are dyslexic, and it's so hard to get them to enjoy reading. I love to read. I always have a book. I steal moments in time, just like you said about your husband and you. And I get so disheartened to see my daughter and child struggle so hard. And I want to inspire that love of reading that I have.
Thanks for your call.
Well, Felicia, first I want to be wary of just providing an answer, because I don't think dyslexia has a blanket answer, a way to solve it. I think it's a mix of conditions that might impact a child's ability to process text. But some suggestions that I can offer that you might not have tried would be to have your child read along with an unabridged audio tape. And make sure it's unabridged. And the support of the oral version can help them through the vocabulary that might cause them to trip up. Another thing you can do is look for the large text versions of books that you might find for people that have visual impairments, because the larger text and the more white space on the page seems to help some children with dyslexia focus more on the words and not get lost in all those small lines of print.
sixth grade seems to be an interesting time because I would imagine if you have really advanced readers in terms of just their ability, it becomes a challenge to find books that are appropriate in terms of content, but are still, you know, there for kids. What do you recommend to kids who are maybe reading at a top high school level but aren't ready for some of the things that might be in adult books?
Well, I have an anecdote to share that illustrates that problem live in my classroom. My students are reading. I'm walking around looking for someone to confer with me, and I see one of my students, a sweet little girl. She's on one of the beanbag chairs, and she's reading Under the Tuscan Sun, which I'm not sure I'm old enough to read. So I just, you know, I was shocked. So I went up and asked her why she was reading that book. You know, what interested her in it? Because I was trying to think about a way I could persuade her not to read it. She said, well, it's my mother's favorite book. And what I realized was that she was such an advanced reader, her mother really was at a loss. You know, what do you do when your child is not interested in those children's books anymore? And the only books her mother really had to offer were the books that she herself liked. Young adult literature has really changed over the past, I would say, 10 years, especially. And there are a lot of high quality, wonderfully written books for teenagers these days. So I think that's an option. I think what we have to worry about and be cautious of is the emotional maturity of the child. And we have to recommend books almost on a case-by-case basis at that point. But there's an intermediate area now that didn't exist when I was a kid. Pretty much when you were done with children's books, adult books were the next logical step. And now we have a huge publishing industry in young adult fiction and books for teenagers.
That's a great comfort, actually.
Yes, it is.
I remember, you know, other kids learn about sex and things like that in the movies. And, mm-hmm. and for me, I was allowed to read whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot that I don't think I would want my kids to pick up at 11 that I did.
I remember reading Jaws when I was 11. I don't think my mother really knew that. But she didn't know what to do with me either, so I understand.
Well, you turned out okay, so I guess it was all right.
Mostly.
We have Donalyn Miller here. She is a sixth grade teacher of language and social studies. She's also a blogger. Her blog is called The Book Whisperer, and her book is called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. We'll return to our conversation in a moment and take more of your calls at 1-800-933-5372. You can also email think@kera.org. I want to let you know, though, that because this is our spring membership campaign, we are fortunate enough to be able to offer a copy of Donalyn's new book, which is called The Book Whisperer, at the $120 contribution level. So if you want to buy the book and you're already a supporter of KERA, we definitely recommend you do that. You're not buying this book for $120. I think it probably costs $15 or $20 at the store. If you want to support KERA and this is something you'd like to have and this is a good incentive for you, we would love to make that all one-stop shopping for you. Give us a call right now at 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. If you are interested in the book, not only does it have all these great ideas that Donalyn suggests, but there is a pretty compelling list of suggested books, particularly for kids of this age, that is probably worth whatever contribution you make to receive this. And I think we have it at the $120 level.
We certainly do, Chris. Thanks. You can pick that your very own copy of The Book Whisperer up and support KERA at the same time. Of course, it's available in bookstores and your favorite online book retailer as well. But if you'd like to support your public radio station and get a copy of Donalyn's book, The Book Whisperer, you can call 800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. It's very easy. Online, you can fill out the membership form yourself in about 2 minutes. We have heard this hour from Sharon Gerard in Fort Worth, William Swan in Allen, Diane Duvall in Dallas, Yonki Patel in Plano, Katrina Michie in Dallas, and Mickey Mayer also in Dallas. Thanks so much to everybody who has pledged online or pledged on the phones.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You can also go to kera.org. You know, we know that there are lots of things competing for your time and your attention, and you choose KERA. We also know that there are lots of elements of your life that are competing for your dollars. We ask that you also choose to think about KERA here, because we can only exist thanks to the support of people who listen to the station and choose to make a contribution. Now, the amount that you can afford may be very different different from the people down the street. It may be very different from anybody else. Only you know that, and we're not about to tell you what that is. But there are a lot of different ways that you can help KERA financially, and we just ask that you make the call. If you've never been a member before, give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 and see how great it feels to support something that you really believe in.
And doing it today, getting on board today, if you are inclined to support the station, will actually help end this drive sooner. The more of you that get involved and make that call, make that web pledge today or tomorrow, thanks to those of you who did yesterday or over the weekend, actually helps us to front load the membership campaign so that we can raise the money necessary faster and get it over with that much sooner. Our pledge to you is that once we reach the overall goal, the membership campaign will stop right then. We'll draw for the winner of the British Airways trip for two to London right then. Someone will win, and it'll all be over. We'll be back to the regular schedule, and we're not going to come back and do a membership campaign until next fall. So this is really a great opportunity, and especially if you joined last year. Everything is set up right now for you to renew your membership, to call 800-456-5372. To go online to kera.org and make your pledge.
Even if you are a member in current standing and you would like to be involved in this drawing for the trip to London, of course, you can make an additional gift and we will toss your name in the same hat. We know that some of you make an additional gift every time we have a fundraising drive, and we do appreciate that. Again, the number is 1-800-456-5372, or you can go online to kera.org. Think about becoming a sustaining member. This is very convenient, and then you may never have to pick up the phone and call us again, except to maybe participate in a think discussion.
Yeah, and you can, if you're currently a sustaining member, you can certainly call and you can renew your membership. You can change the level. You can make adjustments to it. It's very easy. It's very it's affordable. If that's the way you sort of budget your life and you want to say, you know, I think $15 a month is right for KERA. Well, that works out to what is that? It's $180 a year. So that it works out really easily and it's affordable for you. That's a great way to do it. You can use a credit card, a debit card as well. We can send you an invoice and you can cut a personal check for the station. It's your choice. You've already chosen to listen, though. We just hope that you would choose to take that next step. And as Jeff Ramirez says, you're qualified to become a member. You've already chosen to listen. You are a qualified person who can be a member of KERA. You're just a phone call away from membership at 800-456-5372.
This is the most honest and direct way we can come to you for the funding we need. Instead of selling your time to advertisers, we come directly to you and say, we don't waste a lot of time throughout the rest of the year raising money by selling advertising. We just ask you to contribute what you can, what you believe the service is worth to you. Imagine KERA was absent from your life, and then imagine what you would pay instantly to get it back, and maybe make your contribution level that way. Again, our phone number is 1-800-456-5372, 1-800-456-KERA. You can also go online to kera.org. Want to thank folks including Ray Matthews in Dallas, Mark Bergen in Tyler, and all of you who are on the line right now. Give you that number one more time, then we'll go back to our discussion in a moment. 1-800-456-5372. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Donalyn Miller. Her new book is called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. If you'd like to have a copy of the book and support KERA at the $120 level, you can do so by calling 1-800-456-5372. If you would like to join the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372. Let's go next to Paul in Dallas. Hello, Paul.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello. I want to thank you for having Donalyn on. She's an inspiration. I'm recently unemployed and thinking about a career change, and teaching is something that I've contemplated, and I think she's inspired me to really pursue that, and I want to thank her for that. And also wanted to see what other books that she has that she could recommend to children that were inspirations to her or inspirations to her students. I know when I was growing up, Where the Red Fern Grows was, I think, the book that really propelled me into becoming an avid reader, and I'll listen off the air.
Thanks for your call.
Paul, I still remember that I learned the term As the Crow Flies from Where the Red Fern Grows. That's a great book. I always joke that my favorite book is the last one I read because I'm constantly with a book in my hand. But some of the books I remember as a child were series like the Little House series, the Beverly Cleary, her series with Henry Huggins and Ribsy. I remember those books. I also loved The Wind in the Willows, Alice in Wonderland. I remember reading an entire series of biographies in fourth grade. And I think the books that my students enjoy the most, though, are more fantasy than the books that they had when I was a child. I remember reading A Wrinkle in Time in seventh grade, yeah. And that was my first experience with a science fiction book, and I love it now. But most books in fantasy and science fiction genres for kids had robots in them and unicorns, and I wasn't really into that. There's a great series called the Percy Jackson and the Olympian series, which is written by a man in San Antonio named Rick Riordan, and he was a teacher in San Antonio in sixth grade, and then he wrote the first book in that series called The Lightning Thief, which is now being made into a movie with several notable British actors in it. I think Pierce Brosnan is in it, and my students are very excited about the movie, although concerned because they don't believe that movie adaptations of the books they love are that good.
They want it done right.
And I always joke with them, you can't judge a book by its movie. So, but that would be one series that I would recommend. Of course, the Harry Potter books are wildly popular. There are almost too many authors and titles to list.
Is it okay if a kid likes to read, but likes to read what you and I would consider trash?
Well, I think there's a disconnect between what we want kids to read and what we read ourselves as adults. You know, when you look at the New York Times bestseller list, other than The Day After the Pulitzer, you might not see many award-winning books on it because that's not what we're reading. We're reading Janet Ivanovich. We're reading James Patterson. And I love those books. I'm a huge Stephen King fan. But then we don't like it when children read probably the same kind of pulp fiction, mind candy books that we as adults ourselves enjoy. We want them reading books that are good for them.
Yeah, it's interesting too because the thing about escapism is important because to love something, it has to be sort of a comfort activity. At times it can be challenging, but it also has to be something that you can go to when, you know, you're sort of mentally tapped out otherwise.
Well, it's like eating. We want to have a well-balanced diet, but maybe sometimes we're eating salad. Maybe sometimes we're eating chocolate cake. I think students need that same sort of balance in the books that they read because that's what real readers do. Real readers read a book to expand their mind, to learn, to learn about cultures other than their own. But we also read books that are just fun and we can take on the beach or the airplane.
We have an email here from Michelle in Cleburne who writes, I have a 13-year-old son. When I take him to the library, he invariably will choose books that are intimidating in length even to adults. He doesn't get even a quarter of the way through them before he loses interest. I try to encourage him to find easier books without discouraging his ability or desire to choose his own. Any ideas?
Well, it might be that he doesn't feel comfortable with his identity as a reader because he thinks a reader means someone reading one of those huge tomes and carrying it around. There's a certain status with carrying around the latest Harry Potter. Well, they don't make them anymore, but kids are still reading them. I think one thing is to help him. Even at 13, I would still read out loud with him if you did not think that he was motivated as a reader on his own. And perhaps he can discover a book through that experience with you that, again, leads him to an author he might enjoy or helps him branch out on his own. Because then he's going to go look for an author when he goes to the library, not pick a book that's the widest one he can find.
Reading out loud is such a nice thing. And it does seem that in many families, it drops off as soon as kids are able to read by themselves. Why do you want that to continue, even though they could sit alone in a chair and read to themselves?
But the experience of reading a book alone is not the same as reading a book as a group and with your loved ones. And we send that pleasure message to children. connecting ourselves with books when we hold them on our laps, and they get to spend that special time with us as parents or as teachers of small children. And yet, the more they learn to read on their own, the less pleasure messages we are connecting to reading. I think we can see the problem there. And so one, it also underscores to kids that we value reading in the home because we make time for it at the in the home, and everyone is reading and everyone is enjoying it.
Let's go next to Zach in Fort Worth. Hey, Zach.
Hey. Sorry, I was getting another call. But my favorite book as a kid was Carry On, Mr. Bowditch. I don't know if it's still read, but it's a great nautical adventure. My question, though, was about graphic fiction, and by that I don't mean trade paperbacks collecting, 100 issues of Spider-Man. I do mean things like American-born Chinese or Persepolis or things with a more literary mind but just happen to be told in the comic book medium. Do those have a place in the classroom today? Because they can be stimulating, and I know for a friend of mine, his son was having trouble reading but progressed from after showing him a few of those and letting him read those, he did develop an interest into moving on to other things and progressed quite quickly once he was able to visualize things as they were written. So I'll take my answer off of here.
Thanks. What do you think, Donalyn?
Well, first I have to compliment you on your taste because Carry On, Mr. Bowditch, which is still in print, won the Newbery Award, and that's why it's still in print. And then American Born Chinese, which you mentioned, won the Prince Award a few years ago for the best in young adult fiction. I think that any book a kid will read is a good book. And if that means it's a graphic novel, and I appreciate your distinction between trade paperbacks and graphic novels. My husband's a huge comic book fan, and he stresses about that. But I think that any book a child will read is a good book, as I said, and that if a child is drawn to graphic novels as an inroad into reading, then I celebrate that.
Can you talk a little bit about how you have built your classroom library and then how that might apply to the way parents build up a library at home so that when their kids get the notion to read, they can find a shelf full of good things?
Well, one thing we do know is that access to books is probably the number one factor in getting kids to read. And we have found that in low-income schools, in low-income areas, children have less access to books than in a middle-class home. The average middle-class home has about 200 books that are accessible to children to read. Now, that may be cookbooks, that may be an atlas, but the books are there. And what we need to do as parents then is look for ways to bring books into the home. I think the cheapest way to do that for parents is to go to the library and get baskets of books. Plus, you'll have a librarian there who's knowledgeable, who can help you with your child if you're not knowledgeable about books for the age of your child. There are lots of low-cost ways, though, to get books, like our half-price books, which I know is on NPR a lot, and garage sales. I've pulled up to a garage sale and offered $3 for a box of books, and they've given them to me because books are not big sellers at garage sales, and they're heavy, and no one wants to bring them back inside. I think that book clubs that you might see through your child's school are a low-cost way to get books. And book fairs. A lot of public schools have book fairs where you can pick up new paperbacks for as low as $3 or $4. And I think anytime your child expresses that they've liked a book, I would buy that book. And then I would also buy two more by the same author.
You write something that I think is just lovely. You talk about with you and your husband, you pass books back and forth almost like love letters. And it seems like we can do that with our kids too.
Well, I think with my students, I know that there are times when they are troubled, when they're sad, when a pet may have died, they may have moved, they may be experiencing a divorce. They may not feel comfortable talking to me about that one-on-one, but we can still communicate through books, and I can offer them a book where the characters are experiencing similar difficulties, and then we can discuss the book as almost bibliotherapy, as a way to open up that discussion with them. And also, they know that I care about them because they know that I'm thinking about what sort of books they would like to read.
Donalyn Miller's new book is called The Book Whisperer, Awakening the Inner Reader in Every Child. She also has a blog called The Book Whisperer. We'll put a link to that on the Think page of KERA.org. Donalyn, it's been so interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, all of you who are calling this hour, who have participated in the conversation, and also those of you who are making contributions to KERA. I want to thank folks like Edward Greenlawn in Louisville, Amar Akram in Bedford, Sherry Coffey in Aledo, and everyone else who is on the line right now. You can also, remember, become a member of KERA by going to KERA.org. We've made the support button so big and prominent that you couldn't possibly miss it. And if you want to call us on the telephone, we have a room full of lovely volunteers. They're available at 1-800-456-5372. Jeff Whittington is back now, senior producer of Think. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. And yes, we do have Donalyn's book, The Book Whisperer, available when you call and join the station at the $120 membership level. It's really interesting. It's obviously, we got a lot of calls. We had calls we couldn't get to during the hour. And, you know, it's an important topic. I think that there's a lot of discussion, not necessarily maybe in commercial media, but in this sort of media about reading and who reads, and is reading moving to an electronic format? Are we all going to be looking at our little screens? You know, and to me, that's important. And that's the me that produces this show for you, the listener of KERA. I think it's a worthwhile discussion. And Chris obviously agrees, and we would love to make this book available to you. We love making the radio station available to you, but in order to do that, you know, we have to raise the money to pay the bills, and that's why we come to you just a couple of times a year and ask you to fork over some cash.
As we've made clear to you before, we too prefer the times of year when we are just full-time making the radio programming that you love. We know that you want us to get back to regular programming as soon as possible. But here's the reality. You know, occasionally, people who complain about the fundraising drives will say, well, you just make me feel guilty. I assure you that is absolutely never our intention. The last thing we want to do is guilt you into anything. We want to convince you that this
your
is
intention,
important.
Your intention, maybe, Chris.
Maybe Jeff has a different set of motivations. But no, the truth is we want to help you recognize what I think you already believe, which is that this is an important service, not just for you as an individual, but for the community as a whole. And then there's no guilt at all. We're just being as honest as we can by saying that more than half of the money that it takes to run this station comes from people who listen. Some of you give $50 a year, some of you give $5,000 a year, and there are all kinds of levels in between. That's your decision. But the truth is, people who believe public radio should exist should support public radio. There's no more simple formula than that.
800-456-5372 is the telephone number to call. The web address, of course, you know it. It's kera.org. You click on the support button, whisks you to the support page. Everybody who calls or goes online, incidentally, gets entered into this drawing for the British Airways trip. It's two round-trip tickets from DFW to London. It's business class on British Airways, apparently pretty nice and comfortable in business class. And you get a $1,000 Marriott gift card. You get a tour of the BBC studios in London. It's a great opportunity. Someone's going to win this. So get involved. Get on the phone. Get on the website. Do your part at 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
You will be supporting this, your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, K261 CW 100.1 in Tyler, K202 DR 88.3 in Wichita Falls, and K257 EV 99.3 in Sherman.
No matter where you listen, you're listening to KERA. You're listening to your public radio source for all of North Texas, for far North Texas. For a little bit East Texas, it's your public radio station. There are public radio stations all over the country, but this one is your station, and it serves a growing audience. It serves you every single day. And all we're asking you to do is to take responsibility for the fact that you listen. It's listener-supported, not-for-profit public radio. Nobody's getting rich running a public radio station.
Not that we've heard so far.
not here, not in New York. Not in Talkeetna, Alaska, not anywhere in the country. It's a not-for-profit enterprise, and we're asking you to support it. with your contribution, 800-456-5372.
You may also listen to the station streamed live to you all over the world. We know we have listeners as far away as Thailand. We hear from you. You may listen to this show specifically. You may listen to Think on a podcast. We, no matter what time you happen to be listening and what time of day it is, where you are, there is someone available to take your call to make a contribution. Or, of course, you can always go online. And we definitely would appreciate that. We work really hard to serve you. And if you're consuming the product and feel like this is something that is important to you and that you want to continue, we would welcome your contribution and thank you for it. We can thank you for it today with a copy of Donalyn Miller's book, The Book Whisperer. That's being made available at the $120 membership level. You can call 1-800-456-5372 or go to kera.org to take advantage of that.
I want to say thanks to Lindsay Stenberg. Thank you so much, Lindsay and Richardson and Mary Brown and Corsicana. Thank you, Mary, for your call or online gift of support. One call, one online contribution at a time is how we're going to get this thing wrapped up. We're just asking you to do it sooner than later. You know you're going to join. Just do it today. Just do it right now. 800-456-5372.
Unless you like an endless fundraising drive, but I think we can all agree, our political opinions may all differ, but we can all agree that a short fundraising drive is a good fundraising drive. 1-800-456-5372 is our number. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.